It's time for ER 101 with expert guests provided by the American College of Emergency Physicians. Here's Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome to ER 101. This is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month, and it's been called the silent killer because often by the time it's diagnosed, it's in the advanced stages. I want to welcome my next guest and expert on this, Dr. LaCour, who is on faculty at LSU Health Science Center in Shreveport. She is a GYN oncologist. Welcome, Dr. LaCour. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So this disease, I mean, I'm sure it scares a lot of women. It scares me. There are some women that are absolutely predisposed, like, you know, it's brought into the forefront, Angelina Jolie, because it can be related to some genes.
Exactly.
But that's actually a rarity for people that are more predisposed to this. Isn't that true?
Well, when you look at all cases of ovarian cancer, only about 10 or 15% of them are hereditary or related to genes, per se. So majority of the cases, you know, 85, 90% of those are actually going to be what we consider sporadic or just happen by chance.
Right. And those possibly are the more dangerous ones, right? Because if you know... And, wasn't it Pierce Brosnan's daughter just recently died in
right,
her 40s?
Right, and his wife had ovarian
cancer.
And
his wife
also.
Died. And then, I read the whole story in a great scientific journal, People Magazine. And, you know, you look back and her mother had it, her grandmother had it, and the mother's grandma. I mean, it was just incredible.
Right.
So, but there's
right,
kind of... No,
you're
go
right.
Ahead.
In those families, you know, it's obviously going to be more on the minds of those patients, and they're probably going to be more aware of their bodies and the symptoms and maybe, you know, aware of what their mother or their grandmother went through. And you're exactly right. Other patients who don't have a family history, you know, they may not be aware of what the symptoms are because the symptoms for ovarian cancer are very vague. And, you know, it may take even longer for those patients to get diagnosed just because of the symptoms.
Okay. And we'll talk about that. But then I did want to get back because, you know, even in someone like that, which seemed more frightening to me, who's had this long family history, yet this poor woman still contracted it and ended up dying in her 40s. I mean, maybe she wasn't proactive enough or, you know, I don't know.
Right.
It's hard to say.
It's hard to say because, if you do know that it's prevalent in your family and you have a significant family history, there is definitely more... more routine screening that's done. You get screened more often. You know, more mm-hmm. things can be done to look for it earlier. And if you know that you have the gene abnormality, then you can actually have, you know, surgery for these
right.
things, which, again, that goes back to the story of Angelina Jolie having, you know, mastectomy to prevent the cancer from ever occurring. So it all depends on exactly what your family's story is. Mm-hmm. And exactly how proactive you want to be.
Right. And, you said mastectomy, but some of these women, then once when they have their children, they actually have to have
their
ovaries.
You can have your ovaries removed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely.
So let's talk briefly about the symptoms, because I think the reason it's so advanced is you're talking about two tiny little sized organs inside a big abdominal and pelvic cavity, right? So if you're trying to find a tumor there, by the time you're getting some symptoms, that must be a sizable tumor. Is that the
exactly.
issue?
Exactly. Usually if it's a sizable tumor, I mean, not... It doesn't have to be enormous for you to have symptoms, but most patients who have symptoms, their ovaries have probably grown at least 10 times the size of a normal ovary, and a lot of patients have other tumors related to the ovary that are the major things that cause the symptoms. So if it spreads from
so
the ovary and gets into other areas of the abdominal cavity, then that's when patients start to experience the symptoms, you know, bloating, nausea, things like that, you know, not wanting to eat, not having normal bowel movements. And at that point, it probably has spread outside of the ovary.
Okay. So And a lot of the, now, first of all, and who the women that are at risk that we're talking about, what is the age group? I mean, when should women start to consider thinking about it? Or
sure. So in general, most patients are diagnosed with ovarian cancer after the age of 60. So it's not very common before the age of 60. However, if there's a family history of ovarian cancer or breast cancer, or if we're talking about the gene problems, as we mentioned before, mm-hmm. those patients are actually more likely to get the ovarian cancer at an earlier age, so maybe under the age of 50. But the general population, it's going to be over the age of 60.
So, and so for the general population, it usually is women that have already gone through menopause.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And if you think about that, then your ovaries are even smaller, right? Once you've gone through menopause and they're not working.
Right. So, in a postmenopausal patient, the ovaries are normally the size of an almond or even smaller.
Wow, wow. So if you think about a little almond inside your abdominal cavity, how big is something going to happen before you notice it? So
right.
Now there was an encouraging study that I read just this past August, because, you know, what are the screening tools, or what, you know, it's very hard for women.
Right.
I mean, they should go for their regular exams where their doctor will, you know, feel and examine their ovaries. But what is there anything that women can do? Or
so for the general population, or a patient without an increased risk for ovarian cancer, there's really no recommended test other than having the pelvic exam performed by your gynecologist once a year. In patients that are known to have a family history or known to have the gene problem in their family, in those patients we look at two different tests, and those are a CA125, which is a blood marker, and a ultrasound that can look at the ovaries. Now, in the past, we've always said that this test is not a great test, but it's really the only thing that we have for screening for ovarian cancer. And so that's why we only recommended it in patients who we knew were at high risk. Now, the recent study that came out of MD Anderson this past month, the difference in that study, which also included a CA125 and an ultrasound, is that they didn't just look at one point in time. They're looking at the change in a patient's CA125 over time. And then that change would initiate further testing. If there was an increase in the CA125 in a particular patient, then they might go on to have the ultrasound to see if there were any abnormal things that were seen on the ultrasound, any abnormalities in the ovaries or the abdomen. So it's more like, instead of doing it at a single point in time, you're following a stepwise protocol in order to determine if the patient has early ovarian cancer.
Right. And the CA125 is a blood test, but that the problem with it is it's not that specific, right? I mean, it
right.
can be elevated in other things, and that's
there
why you have to look at it over time.
Exactly. You know, CA125, like you say, it's very nonspecific. There are many things that can cause it to be elevated, even, you know, normal uterine fibroids, which are not cancerous. If a patient has endometriosis, they can have an elevated CA125. Mm-hmm. Even just in general infections, like a GI infection, gastroenteritis, or appendicitis, those things can cause an elevated CA125. So, again, it's better to look at it over time as opposed to just one single point in time.
Mm-hmm. And then if you combine that with the ultrasound, it absolutely would, you know, help out. It was interesting, and we don't have really much more time, but it reminded me of the argument with men and the PSA, because there's other things that elevate that blood level, and, you know, you don't want to do too much surgery. There's this push of over-diagnosing cancer. But it's a very interesting thing. I want to thank my guest, Dr. LaCour. This is an interesting topic and something that women should be aware of. This is ER 101. I'm Dr. Lee Van Oker on Radio MD. Stay well.